and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 265. My name's James, and I'm going to be substituting genuine goodwill with caffeine. Joining me today is Peter Willington.
Hi.
And Sir Keith Andrew.
Hello, I'm running low on caffeine.
Oh dear, that's not good. I've had to bolster my supplies to compensate for the fact that, it's been a week. It's not been a good week.
Oh, why are you in a mood?
This will be the podcast where I lose my temper.
I'm gonna sit down. Go on, so hop on my knee.
All right, hang on. There you go.
All right.
Just
ignore whatever you think is in my pocket, by the way.
It's
fine. Yeah, just continue. Yep.
All right. Well, I work from home, as we all know. We're all video games journalists, so we don't have what are considered proper jobs. So I work from home at a desk thing, and I'm in a flat, and the flat upstairs has decided that this week is renovation week. Mm-hmm. So I've had builders chopping the place up upstairs, and I spend a lot of my time trying to do voiceovers for videos. Mm. So I'm there going, the latest platformer, if you jump up and if you try and move to the left bit and if you go down the left,
maybe you should stop making those noises when you're recording the voiceover things. That doesn't seem to be helping.
Look, you. Your wryness might be fine in another podcast, but not today. So that's been happening. And then, yesterday, I hear what I assume is my tap dripping in the kitchen. Go there to turn it off. No, it's not. I go there to turn it off because I think maybe it's a bit loose. And there's water pouring through my ceiling.
Oh, God.
I'm not laughing at that. Because I'm just going on with the euphemism idea.
Ripped up the bathroom in the upstairs flat, and they've smashed a pipe, and I'm experiencing genuine weather conditions in my bloody kitchen.
So have you told them?
Well, I had to run upstairs and go, guys, raining in my flat.
Excuse me.
Would you be so kind as to?
I thought you might have been all British and just not mentioned it. And just
oh no no, I was all Scottish, as is my blood descent, and I went upstairs and went, oi! Sort this the f*** out. And they didn't have a clue. Like, they went, really? Oh, yeah. It's not like they burst it and came running downstairs. They didn't know it had happened. So if I hadn't been working from home, if I did have a proper job, I'd have come back to find my entire flat flooded and everything I own floating down the street. So, it's been a rubbish week, frankly. How are you guys?
I feel a bit better now because I'm comparing my life to yours and I quite like it, so...
Most people say that, actually.
<He's cheering laughs>
when they look at my life, yeah.
That's actually... I was quite depressed, but things looking up.
Yeah. Oh, good, good. I'm glad my misery is helping everyone else. Well, I hope you listeners have had a better week than I have. We're going to try and raise the tone a little because we've got loads of new releases, loads of news, and some games that we've been playing. Let's do some updates first. Shadowblade has been updated. It was the gold award-winning ninja-style platformer in which you jump from wall to wall and slice up people. There are now 12 extra levels, comprising a new chapter. You also get 3 new hardcore levels as well, and an extra gang of thugs to slice up called the Punk Mob. You also get some new songs as well. They've bolstered the soundtrack. It's a pretty comprehensive update, in fact. It's still available on the App Store now. It's £1.49 and $1.99 for the game, but the update is, of course, free, so go get that. Space Hulk has also been updated. This is the digital version of the classic 80s board game from Games Workshop. What it's given you is an extra chapter in which you will discover the Fangs of Fenris campaign. Don't know what they are, don't know what a Fenris is, or why its teeth are of particular interest. Either way, it gives you 3 new missions, and it's set in kind of an icy Space Hulk, so a starship that's been frozen in deep space. You have to go and explore that and try not to get munched, presumably by gene stealers. It's always gene stealers in Space Hulk, isn't it?
Yeah. But which Space Marines?
Oh, Space Marine Terminators. Space Wolves in this particular instance.
There you go.
11 new Space Wolf Terminators. I don't quite understand that because Space Wolf Terminators are all basically the same, right?
No.
Like a troop, right?
No, Space Marines.
Yeah, no, but I mean the class, the Terminator class.
No.
So, what? As in, one Space Wolf Terminator is not the same as another Space Wolf Terminator?
No, not necessarily. Like, some will be lightning specific, so they'll have, like, big lightning claws. So there'll be like hand-to-hand melee.
Some of them
will be some of them will have heavy bolters. Some will have plasma cannons. And in the canon, even Space Wolf Terminators are different to Ultramarine Terminators.
Well, yeah, I know there's a difference between the classes and the Dark Angels and whatnots. Mm. But, yeah, I suppose they have different weapons. Well, you've got 11 new ones, either way, which you can play in all of Space Hulk's other campaigns, too. The game itself is £6.99, $9.99. It ain't cheap. I think we gave it an okay rating. But if you've got it, yeah, cash in. New stuff for free. Go! So, you know, Rovio announced that Angry Birds game for girls, right?
Yeah.
Which was called Angry Birds Stella and is in no way condescending towards girls, but and includes the line in the promo material, just because they're pink
just
doesn't mean that they're
ladies.
Not capable of doing adventures and stuff.
That's very true.
Yeah, that is true. It's true. And it bears pointing out, because you remember, girls, just because you're girls, right?
Just because you're pink.
Yeah. And doesn't mean that you're completely useless. Yeah, well, they've set up that game for the ladies. And earlier on in the week, or late last week, they released a little teaser trailer which showed a camera swooshing up a suit of armour with big kind of epic Games of Thrones-style music playing in the background. And it panned all the way up to the helmet, and the helmet opened, beep, and inside was the little red bird looking all psycho, and he jumped out of the camera and went, whoa. And this was the mystery teaser for the mystery new game. The game has now been announced. It's called Angry Birds Epic, and it is a turn-based RPG. Yep, okay. That was met with the enthusiasm it clearly deserves.
Is it in-house, or is it something they've farmed out to other people?
Don't know. Can only assume it's been made in-house. I mean, their house now consists of, like, 200-plus developers or something, doesn't it?
They're yeah, huge, I mean, but, you know, Angry Birds Go was farmed out. I wonder if this has been farmed out in a... Because I can't see them wanting to do this.
Well, I can't see them either wanting to or necessarily having the background of doing it. Like,
they're stretching the brand pretty thin now, aren't they? It was quite prudent about where they used it, and now it's a bit like that era of Star Wars where they're advertising everything on Earth. And
yes.
Well, it's the new Mario. Like, Mario's done everything, hasn't he? Mario's been to a party. He's driven a car. He's done tennis, golf, everything.
He's ridden a horse with Sonic on the back.
I did this interview with Exient, who are the guys behind Angry Birds Go. And I talked to the art director, and I basically said, like, how do you get across, like, you know, personality and stuff like that? And he said, if you think about it, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but if you think about it, basically all of the characters are is circles. So, like, to give them a personality is actually kind of hard, because it's like giving Kirby a personality.
Yeah.
And so, but because they're so simple, you do think to yourself, well, actually, like, it would work quite well within anything. Like, it's the reason Kirby's in so many different genres of games, and Mario and that sort of thing. They just kind of work in anything. There's no reason that they can't.
He's a bouncy blob, and these are essentially just bouncing or flapping blobs. Yeah. And now you're going to line three of them up in a row in true Final Fantasy style and face them off against a bunch of pigs who are all lined up in a row, and then take turns in battering them with swords and arrows and all that fantasy stuff. They've gone proper kind of Morrowindy Elder Scrolls-y fantasy with it. The combat itself is going to be turn-based, like we said, just like you used to play when you were a kid back in the day. Oh, just like you and your daddy did. Well, we did, because we played games. And you're going to be not only fighting these creatures with weapons and spells and all that, you're going to be crafting new weapons, because there's a crafting system involved, leveling up characters and doing all the other stuff you'd expect to do in an RPG. There's one screenshot that's out that shows you kind of like mid-combat, and yet it looks like two lines of characters, enemies and friendlies fighting against each other. There's not much in the way of heads-up display stuff, and I can't imagine it's going to be too complicated.
It's just weird, because like the whole idea behind Go, I assumed, was because they wanted something that would roll in money constantly. It was something quite easy to grasp in a kind of Supercell way or a King way, and they wanted that. Whereas, like, RPGs aren't that. You know, even the simplest RPGs aren't. They're not universal, are they? They are something you either like or you don't. It seems quite weird for them to think, oh, let's make an RPG.
Well, they've made it free to play, straight off the bat. So they are going for something where they're looking for income to keep rolling in by people buying stuff, presumably perks and consumable items and that sort of thing. So they're definitely trying to drain some cash from it. I don't know. Like, if you're into playing turn-based RPGs, do you want to play an Angry Birds one? And if you're an Angry Birds fan, do you want to play a turn-based RPG?
There have been good examples of RPGs using characters that you wouldn't normally think would work in
Paper
RPGs.
Mario, I suppose.
Paper Mario and the much forgotten Sonic RPG by BioWare.
I very much forgot it.
Mm-hmm. Like there are examples of that working, so it's possible. And for me, I know you don't agree, but they haven't done me wrong yet. There's not been a single game that's come out of Rovio that I've thought,
meh. Oh yeah, you're the person who liked Angry Birds Go, aren't you?
Yeah.
In spite of all other opinions and logic.
Common sense.
Yeah, that.
I think they've got it in them. I think they choose good developers. I think they choose good, you know, they don't often make the best decisions. Like the Angry Birds Lady Edition, whatever it was, like, you know, Stella. Like, I don't think that was a great decision, but like,
well, we have to see what that's about. Yeah, I mean, I'm rushing to judgment on that. I just didn't like the promo material. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Pish, but they've not, for me, they've not yet made a game that is poor. So I'm quietly optimistic about this one.
Okay, well, from what little we've seen, the visuals are very strong. It does look good if the screenshot is representative. It's going to be soft launched in Canada and Australia this week. So as you listen to the podcast, it should be out now in those two regions. We'll have to wait quite a while for it to turn up anywhere else. They're going to trial it in those areas. Usually monkey around with the in-app purchases, reduce the price usually, because they usually launch with incredibly expensive ones and then kind of pare it back a little bit as people start complaining. And then it'll go universal in a while. What we'll do on Pocket Gamer, no doubt, is download at the moment it appears and give you some nice first impressions.
Flights we have to take to Australia and Canada to get these games.
I know. But it's totally worth it for that, you know, 500-word article that we put up. We'll get a screenshot and everything, Keith. It'll be amazing. It'll be like,
play it in the airport and come back.
Exactly. Awesome level reporting there. So check back with us to see a bit of hands-on video, I suspect, both here and on AppSpy. And some words as well. We'll keep you in the loop. On to awards news. We talked about the fact that BAFTA was incoming, the awards ceremony for the video games. It has been, it has gone, and Tearaway has emerged triumphant.
Yes!
No less than 3 BAFTAs it walked away with this year. So not only did it win the Best Mobile Game category against games like Badland, Device 6, Plants vs. Zombies 2, Ridiculous Fishing, that sort of thing, it also walked away with the Artistic Achievement Award, which I thought was rather impressive. It also got
Family. I don't understand what the Family
Award is.
Yeah,
the Family category. I assume it's just like Best Family Game, Best like kiddie-friendly game.
What, game without killing and stuff in it.
Yes, game with only like minimal curb stomps and stuff for the nippers, you know. Keep it friendly and cuddly. Unless you in the game decide to take a photo of your genitalia and use that as the godson image.
I thought Pete had done that, but it was actually his face, so, you know.
Oh. That suddenly
you
becomes
disappointed.
Not so family friendly.
Why were you disappointed? Keith, why were you disappointed?
Keith. Anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I haven't actually played this because I don't have a PS Vita because, you know, I don't have the money to burn. I know.
Lame.
Yeah, so I take it you've played it then, Keith, yeah?
No, I haven't played this.
Exactly, so shut up.
I haven't played this because it's a video game. I got my PS Vita just to look at.
You wanted a different Twitter client, so...
Yes, quite a bad one.
Another way to experience Twitter. But Peter's not only played it, you reviewed it, didn't you?
I did. I gave it a 10.
You gave it a 10? Is that your first 10?
It's my first and only 10.
Wowzers. Well, apparently BAFTA agrees with you. It's the one of the games, apart from Wipeout, that I look at the Vita and say, oh yeah, that looks good, and it uses the Vita in an interesting way, and the cameras and the touchy bits and stuff. So I can't justify buying it just for that game and Wipeout with the loading screens. But if I was to get one, that's the one game I'd probably get.
There was a mobile game that did win an award at the BAFTAs.
Oh really? What was that?
It was The One to Watch. Which I was on the panel for.
Is that a game, The One to Watch?
No, that's the award. Oh. The ones to watch.
Go on then, what was the game?
It was called Size Does Matter, and not in any way rude like it might sound. It was a kind of a music rhythm action kind of game. The idea was that you control like a load of blocks, and coming towards it are blocks with gaps in, and you have to change the size of your block so that it passes through these gaps to the beats of the music. So you have to swipe up to make the block longer or swipe down to make it smaller so it fits in the right side, move it up and down so it... it corresponds with the... I'm trying to load the page, but Biz happens to be down at this
size
moment.
Size does matter.
It sounds like that mad game that you see on those crazy Japanese game shows in which you've got a person standing there and there's a wall approaching them with like a cutout.
It's a bit like Hole in the Wall.
Left to jump, yeah.
Albeit with blocks.
It's a little bit like that. I played it in... I played it last year.
You would have played it. You would have played it in Scotland. Right?
Mm-hmm. I played it, and he took me behind a curtain, which I thought was a little bit presumptuous,
and said, "Size does matter." While slowly unbuckling his belt,
and he reached into his coat, and he pulled out a Vita and said, "We're not going to tell you that we're working on this, but I've got a Vita version." And I played it, and I was just like, "Oh God."
Was it fun?
So amazing.
Award worthy?
So
okay.
Amazing.
There were two other games up as well, which were kind of good in their own right. But this was leagues ahead, really. It was these guys are going to do something special. Because, I mean, the whole idea of the award is that actually what you're playing isn't meant to be finished. You know, it's kind of like, oh, they're working on this. This is like an example of the kind of things they could do.
Okay.
And you're like, no, well, this is... You play more than one version. Actually, you play a version from when they first submitted, and then an updated version mm-hmm. that they changed with feedback they got, but either version they could have launched, you know, there and then. It was just, you know, this is a easy concept but really hard to master kind of game. That old cliche.
Oh, okay.
And I was rubbish at it, but really enjoyed it, and good soundtracks as well. They'd gone to artists like that have worked on music for other games that kind of have slight notoriety about them. And the thing is that the clever idea is if you get a good score mm-hmm. and it gives you the option to tweet each level, it then includes the Twitter handle of the guy or the girl who made the music in the background.
Oh,
so it's kind
clever.
Of it's quite a nice little promotion idea, so they get a bit more exposure as well. So yeah.
All right. Well, say very positive running at the BAFTAs this year. Certainly for the mobile world, anyway. It's nice to see awards winning, like winning in the best creative category. That's against all the console games and all the other games there. That's not just a mobile only thing. So, good result there for Tearaway, and well deserved by the sounds of it. Moving on from that, it's the game and topic that just won't die. So, you know that Flappy Bird, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you might have heard of it. It might be coming back. After all the hassle of it getting massive and then being taken down and terrified interviews with the developer and talk of addictive qualities and all various other reasons why the game has been pulled, Dong Nguyen, who gave an interview to Rolling Stone, said that he is considering, inverted commas, bringing Flappy Bird back. But if he does so, he's going to include a warning that players should take a break every now and then.
Aww.
Which will make it all okay, because we all listen to that warning which appears on your PlayStation or whatever when it says, please take a break every hour? Take a 15-minute break every hour. That was the thing, wasn't it? Whatever.
If you read the interview, it's really quite, well, it's not amusing, but quite interesting. He talks about how he hadn't told his parents about any of this.
And like, because they don't understand games. That's right, they don't understand games. So it's like, oh yeah, it just happens to have tens of thousands of pounds rolling in every week. And he's just like, doesn't mention it to his parents. But yeah, he's gone ahead and quit his day job and decided not to do that anymore. Because it's still raking in tens of thousands of pounds every week. Because there are still hundreds of thousands of people who have the game on the iPhone before it was pulled. Mm-hmm. And that's still generating lots of revenue through ad content. So he's sort of laughing. Even pulling it, he's still making money hand over fist.
Did he do the interview in a gold lamé jacket? He would look proper awesome in that, wouldn't he? Just like walk in, just like proper pimping.
The funny story today that literally only really about like an hour or so ago was that there's a company now applying to trademark the word Flappy.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's trying to.
He's going to have to fight them.
Grab a load of money from all these clones for a game that they had nothing to do with, because they have a game called Flappy. It would appear.
It's just called Flappy.
It's just called Flappy. I would show you the page if Biz wasn't down right now. But yeah, it's a load of. It would appear to be a load of rubbish.
Natch.
But Yeah, that's how the industry works. That's how you make your money.
Stealing copyright from other people and claiming it was yours all along.
Man, I love doing that.
That's the way forward. Oh, amazing. Well, so yeah, if you haven't played it yet or you didn't get a chance to download it while it was out, you may be in luck if you consider this sort of thing luck.
There's over 180 clones of Flappy Bird on Windows 8 alone.
Oh, really?
Most people don't think there's even 180 apps on.
I was going to say, that's going to take on a pie chart, therefore that consumes the majority of games on Windows now.
But I had a play of some of them, and it's easier because most of them are done in landscape mode. So you have a forewarning of what's coming up, which does actually change it a lot. But again, even ones that have literally lifted all of the assets, the take on physics is terrible, and they're just either too easy or too hard. It's, you know, the balance is not there.
Can't recreate that magic spot that he managed to pinpoint. Well, fair play to him, and obviously he's making a bunch of cash, and yeah, we might see it coming back. He's working on other games as well, he hastens to add, so he's going to try and not be a one-hit wonder, but we'll see how that turns out. However, returning with a brand new game after previous successes, 11-Bit Studios, the guys behind Anomaly, the Anomaly series, so you've got Anomaly Total Warzone Earth, something or other, Anomaly Korea, which was a kind of sort of sequel, but it was a bit of a tag on, and Anomaly 2, which was launched late last year. Their new game is another game involving war and stuff, but they're putting a bit of a different spin on it. It's called This War of Mine, and they've just today, I think, released a brand new trailer for it as a kind of proof of concept. And it's aiming to show the sort of slightly sadder civilian casualty side of war. So it's got the now traditional trailer where you see people running in slow motion in a war zone while a sad, pretty song plays in the background, as popularised by David Fincher's Gears of War advert, where it's doing Mad World and it's in slow motion.
Oh, that was a good ad.
It was a good ad, but then it served as the default template for every other ad doing war.
Almost every other game had, actually. If you think about all the ads that kind of followed, a lot of them were just soundtrack of popular song, two shots of game, rather than the old school way of having some voiceover, which Nintendo have gone back to, telling you to buy this game because it's really good and look Nerdy's playing it.
Well, they've got to try what they can at the moment, haven't they? But if you go to the site, you can see it. Say it's called This War of Mine. The screenshots are kind of hand drawn, it looks like. This camera's kind of panning along a war scene, and it shows all the warriors running in slow motion, a modern warfare type of situation with destroyed buildings, and as it pans along towards the end, you see inside a house, and in there you've got a family who look wounded and they're huddling on the floor, and there's the obligatory little child looking worried and tear-stained in the distance. And you're going to take on the role of an actual civilian trying to wade through the war zone and not die. So it's been described almost as a kind of survival horror, which is what piqued my interest slightly. And it's going to have to force you to make apparently complex decisions based on morality principles. So a bit Walking Dead, I guess, where it's going to force you to...
I will remember this.
Are you going to leave your sister behind, or are you going to leave your dad behind? Stuff like that, I imagine.
Is that a spoiler? Is that what you... Have you just given it away there?
Who would you leave behind in that situation?
Am I going to really say which one of my siblings and or parents I love most on a national broadcast?
I would leave behind both of them as long as I could take with me, like, my Vita.
What the hell have you got against James's sister and dad? Honestly, that's such an awful thing to say.
Oh, no, now I feel really bad. No, I would ditch my Vita to save yours, James. I would.
You ditch your Vita to save my Vita. I don't have one, so...
If it would cheer you up on this podcast, I would do anything.
Hooray! All right, then. Do a handstand in a...
Go on. God.
Gingham dress.
Yes,
he's in his pants already. That's amusing enough to do a handstand in your pants, I would have thought.
I suppose. I don't know. The gingham dress adds a scent. Because the way that dresses work, if you do a handstand, they kind of fall down. And then it looks like you're
disgusting.
The right way up.
That is disgusting.
Because the dress is kind of like an umbrella turned inside out. It looks like the other way up.
You look like a well-dressed Silent Hill monster.
Exactly. And I've got a bit of a thing for them Silent Hill monsters. Arms for legs, legs for arms. Lovely. So apparently, according to the blurb, there's no right or wrong decision in this War of Mine thing. Much like The Walking Dead, it's going to be about choices and doing what you feel is the right thing, and probably making a nasty choice and people will die and you'll feel really sad, which is now the zenith of computer gaming, apparently, making yourself feel bad over decisions.
I used to feel like that when I'd leave, if I was playing Sonic 2 on my own and I'd leave Tails behind and he'd drop off the edge and then he'd keep coming back flying. I used to feel sad for him and he'd land and I'd already be off the screen again and he'd die.
That didn't really bother me because there seemed to be an infinite supply of Tailses just waiting in the wings to fly up.
He does come back. He dies a lot.
So there's going to be more information about this one coming out at GDC. So we will keep our ears to the ground and let you know more about it later. About this week, you've got a few big ones, starting with Surgeon Simulator, brackets touch. So Surgeon Simulator has been out on the PC for like 3 years, 4 years, and there's been updates every year, the most recent one being 2013, I think. There's a new version of it, in which you play a doctor who has limited hand-eye coordination and has to perform operations on a poor anaesthetized patient. And it's a bit like playing that game Operation, in which you shouldn't touch the sides, only you can't really control your fingers. You're using hammers and buzzsaws and everything else and smashing open rib cages, ripping out lungs and kidneys, and generally making an absolute pig's ear of the process, which is very fun. And it's led to a billion videos on YouTube of people basically trying to perform these surgeries and messing it up and sticking scalpels in people's eyes and all that. It looks fun to play. The way that it works is it's very awkward to control. So you know that like Quop game in which you control each leg or appendage of the runner with a key on the keyboard, which sounds easy but is in fact incredibly difficult. It's got an element of that in it, as in it's deliberately weird and tough to control. So in the PC version you see an arm which works kind of like a grabber, you know, in those machines where you at the arcades where you have to go and grab a little fluffy toy out of a cabinet. It kind of works like that, and you're controlling that, and then you're controlling the fingers with the other hand, and it's very tricky to work. On the iPad version, which has just come out, you use two fingers. So on the left, you maybe use one finger to pick up an item. So you put your finger on it, move it up and drag it around the screen. And then you can tap with the other finger, say tap on the guy's ribcage, and a little crosshair will appear. And then you have to drag the item towards it with your finger, the one that's pressed down, and then use your free finger to kind of maneuver it. So if you're holding a hammer, you put your finger down as the head of the hammer and then try and smash it down and move it, waggle it around. And it's really, 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 really tough to control in any sensible way. Which begs the question, is it deliberately awkward and tough because that's the point of the game? Or is it badly optimized? Which is really tough to judge, because you know that a lot of those ironic jokes which are like, yeah, it's not funny. Oh, but it's not supposed to be funny. That's the joke. Do you see? And you're like, well, is it funny or isn't it funny? Is it just a crap joke, or have you done it deliberately?
It's like when people in Blood Dragon was the most recent example, where they go, huh, another tutorial mission. That's original. And it's just like, well,
it's the knowing irony. It's like, oh, we know that this bit's crap. And you're like, well, if you know it's crap, it's still crap. Like, ironically or otherwise, it's still rubbish. So there's been a bit of a divide here. I've played it, and we're going to be playing it tonight. As you listen to this podcast, if you've downloaded it early and you're still at work, 5 p.m. tonight on the Friday, we're going to be playing this. 5 p.m. British time, or 9 a.m. in the morning if you're over in the States, Pacific Standard Time. We're going to be playing it on the App Spy Twitch stream, and you can decide for yourselves. There's also the review up on our site. John Monday's reviewed it, and he's given it a 6. Saying it's funny and it's fresh and it's kind of satisfying, but it's a bit shoddy at the edges and kind of shallow. Like, it's essentially a collection of mini games because you're performing all these different operations. So you can do a heart transplant or a kidney transplant or whatever, and that's it. You just boot up the thing, you're presented with the guy with the open rib cage, and you go to work with whatever tools you want. You lose blood if you nick arteries and that sort of thing, and if he bleeds out, he dies, or if he starts to die, you can shock him with the defibrillators. That's quite funny. And it is entertaining, and it's like a sandbox surgery, if you like. So it's just like grab whatever you can and attack it in whichever way you see fit. Looks amusing. I've played it for about half an hour and it's fiddly and a bit awkward. But I don't know if it's supposed to be like that. It's a weird game to judge. We've given it a 6 and said, nyeh, but you can decide for yourselves. It ain't cheap, mind. It's, I think, £3.99 or $5.99. So if you are a little bit unsure, tune into our stream and watch the video, which we'll post up on the Apps by YouTube channel afterwards, so you can watch it and see for yourself. Something we did play this week, actually. First Strike, which we were doing on yesterday's Twitch. We played it at the very end because it was one of the more in-depth games. It's like, the best way I've heard it described anyway, and I said this on the Twitch stream, is it's Google Maps with nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool and sold me pretty much immediately, I'll be honest. You were watching this rather than playing it, Peter. What did you see? What was your impression of it, visually speaking?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a bit like Pandemic and Plague Inc. and that sort of thing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
If this had been released 15 years ago, I think you'd call it like a god game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah, yeah. In terms of you've got that top-down perspective, it's basically you can see the whole world. The globe is your map, and you can spin it around like you can, and that bit at the beginning of XCOM when you're at the base and you're choosing where to go next. It's like that. And you see the globe floating in space, and you spin it around with your finger.
It looked like it was fun. It looked like you were having fun.
I was having a bit of fun. Actually, I was going to talk about it at the end on the Throne of Games, but yeah, I'll just talk about it now because that's what I did most. So you have to expand your territory and basically take over the world. You have to become the dominant superpower, and you have a nuclear arsenal at your disposal that you have to build and build and build. You also have the option to do other things, so you can move into other territory, which takes, you know, some time. It's not turn-based, per se. Like, everything's operated on a timer. So if you want to perform an action, say, for example, research, and you can, like, you know, research better weapons and other nuclear deterrents and defensive missiles and that sort of thing, then you hit the defense button and or the research button, and a little timer will appear and it will kind of wind down. And whilst you're doing that, each state within your Uber state can perform individual actions. So it's kind of micromanaging all the different things and building up your stockpile of nuclear weapons and all that sort of stuff, while the enemy is doing the same. So you've got like a big old superpower in Europe, in the UK and all that. You've got one out there in China. So you have to keep your eyes on those. And when you feel like the time is right, you launch your nuclear strike and it becomes available every so often. And then you spin around the globe, pick a target, and then watch as the missiles fly out of your country. And it looks really cool. Like massive comically sized missiles come flying out your country and zoom towards your enemy and kaboom.
You were saying you felt a bit sad.
Well, I launched at London, first of all, because I was playing as the USA, and I'm a British, and therefore have that, you know, built-in sense of self-loathing. So sure. I thought, yeah, we'll take out
you
London.
You nuked London?
I did. 8.6 million people died.
Well, of course they did.
Well,
you nuked them.
It flashed up the statistics.
It wasn't going to burst into a load of flowers, was it? You know,
it
rained down
ending.
Petals on the city.
However, they retaliated.
Well, I should hope so.
As in, while my missiles were in the air, they retaliated.
Well, they would,
the kind of 4-minute warning. And I wasn't initially expecting that, and I thought that was quite cool. So as my missiles streaked forward through the sky, I saw them go ba-dumf out of Britain. I'm like, damn, they're coming for me as well. And they crossed in the air and then swooshed down. And yeah, when I nuked Britain, you get the very slow motion kind of mushroom cloud billowing out from your strike point. And then it starts flashing up stats and tells me exactly how many million people I've killed.
Where did they nuke you?
Right in the Canada. Yeah. And
they
a bit.
It's Canada?
Yeah, well, yes. They went for the northern territories. They need a bit of Canada. And I think Greenland as well, they got.
Well, that's a bit pointless, nuking Greenland, isn't it?
I know. There's not much there. Scorched earth now. And yes, it's interesting because it looks very slick and classy, very well presented. Whenever you go and want to perform an action, there's no heads-up display per se. You just tap on a state and it goes bloop. And from the state appears like maybe 6 or 8 different buttons, context-sensitive circular buttons kind of billow out, spring forth from the area. And then you can choose an item and then they kind of disappear again. So it's very nicely sort of self-contained heads-up display, very clean. And it's got this kind of really mellow, chilled out music, which I couldn't hear during the stream, but then I heard later when I played it on my own. And it's got this very serene, calm soundtrack. Considering you're engaging in nuclear warfare, it feels a bit kind of counterintuitive, but it's nice. It throws you off. It's quite deep. It plays out quite quickly. Things escalate fast. I mean, we played it for 30 minutes on the stream, and by the end of it, I was just basically dead, and half the Earth was scorched.
Well, I mean, you say things escalate quickly. You did launch nuclear weapons.
But that's the point of the game. It's a game called First Strike, so I struck first. And
Keith, I wasn't happy about this. I was basically saying, can you win through peace? Apparently you can't. You would have been proud of me, though. I was well pacifistic about the whole thing.
If London gets nuked anytime soon, I'm so blaming you, James. It's been tempting fate.
Thing is, if anybody nuked Manchester, nobody would notice.
Says the man who lives in Bristol. You know, glass houses, Pete. Glass houses.
No, they're not glass houses. They're all big brick and sandstone,
and they're all colourful, and they're on a hill.
They're all colourful on a hill. They're lovely.
We have full glass houses. We have glass houses because we're very futuristic.
So that you can see what you want to nick. Right. Okay. So we gave it a silver award. First strike, and Harry liked it, said it was good. The sentence I like says, first strike has worthy and important things to say, but whilst it's saying them, you get to blow up Greenland, which I think is a solid recommendation. Really thought-provoking, fart-paced strategy game murdering millions with a flick of the finger will make you laugh and cry, which I agree with. When it first struck and it flashed up 8.6 million, and it happens very slowly, it doesn't go boom. It kind of goes womp in that really slow-motion mushroom cloud. And whilst it's happening, you're like, I do feel slightly bad because they didn't actually do anything to me. And that's quite
funny. London, honestly.
I know, but you know, they'll get over it. They'll rebuild. They've done it before. We'll do it again. So that's out right now. It's £2.49, which equates to, I think, $3.99. So you can grab that right now if you want. We'll bustle through the rest nice and quick. Dude Ski, which is a downhill skiing game done in a pixel art style, kind of an endless skier. You tap left and right on the screen to steer your little guy around trees, bushes, over obstacles, that sort of thing. If you double tap on the screen with both thumbs, you'll jump, which means you can hop over stones and other obstacles. You collect pine cones as you go, which you can use to power up your little guy, so you can buy him a little helmet and other equipment to, you know, boost his skills and make him last a little bit longer. We played this on the live stream as well. It's really quite good fun, actually. Not especially deep or anything, but the controls are incredibly responsive, so that when you're swooping in and out of your little slalom posts, I forget what they're called, flags, whatever you call them, but the little slalom thing, so you're kind of going left, right, and you have to take them in a particular order, like in a real slalom. That stuff's really quite good fun. Again, you saw this playing. You quite liked the art style, didn't you, Peter?
Loved it. It looked like Freeski.
Yes, a bit like Freeski. I think we've given it an 8 out of 10. I said, yeah, it's a bit of a giggle. £1.49 or $1.99. Check out the videos on both sites. It's sort of probably worth a look. Another one called Amber Halls is available. The developer of the game actually appeared on our Twitch stream while we were playing through and started giving me advice at it because I was crap. It reminded me a little bit of Dungeolot, that tile-based roguelike in which you're uncovering blocks. It's the same idea, as in there's a grid on the screen and you're a very lo-fi looking character and you have to move towards an exit and you're being attacked by enemies as you go, which is very Dungeolot. Only instead of uncovering tiles as you go, they're all open. The trick here is to try and make it to the exit whilst collecting little pentagons. Problem is, every time you move, all of your enemies move a space as well. And the thing you have to do is get to the end whilst avoiding crashing into any of them, in a very Pac-Man sort of way. But there are loads of enemies coming at you from all sides. There are extra powers that you can use. It's incredibly lo-fi, like 8-bit minimal visuals, but just like they're just blocks, basically, little squares, completely bold colours and, you know, not flashy in the visual department, just sort of bog standard, but done in a stylish way. It's all kind of pentagonal and right angles and stuff. I only played it for a little bit. I think it's for a particular kind of player, I suppose, if you're into the... I don't know. It's one of those ones where you have to plan about 15 moves ahead in order to get out. So if you're that strategic brain-typed person, then you might like it. It's 69p or 99 cents. You can grab that right now. The one that raised an eyebrow for me a little bit was Glorkian Warrior, and not just because of its slightly silly name. It looks like it's one thing, but turns out to be quite another. So if you look at it and see the art from it, it's very like brightly neon-coloured thing where you see a little alien guy with three eyes talking to these big guys with space helmets on, and it looks like it's going to be a platformer, right? A kind of 2D cartoony platformer. And then it starts playing, and all these enemies suddenly descend from the top of the screen in waves, doing little patterns and stuff. And you go, hang on a minute, this is a shmup. And then they suddenly form into little ranks and start moving left and right. And you go, oh no, wait, it's space invaders. It's actual space invaders. And your little guy is running left and right on the bottom of the screen, firing upwards, just like space invaders. But then a little creature emerges from the side of the screen. And I'm like, what's this? And I realize suddenly there's a jump button. And I jump on his head and he goes, boop, and explodes. And I get a little power up, like in Mario. So it's like a shmup Space Invaders thing with a slight platforming element, which was weird. In its defense, it's quite good fun to play. I only played it for about 15 minutes. Very high speed, very fast frame rate, very, very smooth. And I was immediately kind of like having a bit of fun with it. Character design, I guess, is an acquired taste, would you say?
Yeah, it looks a bit sort of like Rocco's Modern Life, 1990s, ooh, that's a bit gross and weird, but kind of cute at the same time.
I don't know how much lastability it has, but I enjoyed it for the brief time I played it. It's £1.99 or $2.99, Glorkian Warrior, Trials of Glork. Come sit upon my throne of games. Come one, come all, and enter the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. All three of us have been in here, and all week, really. I've popped in now and then to get away from all the banging that's going on upstairs. And I think Peter, he just likes sort of shadowy corners. And Keith
Peter's
likes
upstairs.
Keith likes innuendo, doesn't he?
In my endo, yeah.
In your endo. Oh! There it is, yeah. So I've kind of already talked about the game that I've been playing this week. We covered it First Strike a little bit earlier.
Where you sat on the throne when you did that? I wasn't looking. That is the rule.
I sort of perched on it, didn't you?
Yeah, I was hovering on the edge.
If you weren't sat on it, your opinion counts for nothing.
There was a sliver of my left buttock just perched upon the perched upon the cushion there. So that's good enough. Good enough. Shut up. Whatever. You're not my mum. And
yes, I am.
So that leaves yourself and Peter. You have been playing a game, Peter, haven't you?
I have indeed. I've been playing many games.
Yeah, one specifically, though.
One specifically. Now, very quickly, before we come to that, we have something to plug. We are going to do a live podcast.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Next week. Yeah, Keith, you're at Gudica. So we're going to use this opportunity, because we can't figure out, basically, how to do three live webcam streams on a Twitch feed at once. So we're going to do it when you're away. And
we totally can do that, by the way.
I'm sure we probably can.
It's easy.
But basically, Keith, since you're going away, we thought what we would do is do a live version of the Pocket Gamer podcast on Twitch TV.
Twitch.
Yeah, Twitch. It's this new thing that the kids are doing. And we're doing with AppSpy. Go to twitch.tv/AppSpy, one word. And give us a follow or whatever it is. But 6 p.m. on Thursday the 20th of March. Thursday the 20th of March, 6 p.m. Just get that into your head. 6 p.m. Thursday the 20th of March. We're going to do a live stream. It will be James and I talking into cameras. So you'll be able to see what we look like. And it will shock you. It will shock you.
I'm going to miss this. Is this going to be saved on the web anywhere that I can watch also, when I get back?
It will, if you can't make it at 6 p.m, which will be 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, then it will also go out somewhere.
Well, it'll go out as an actual audio podcast, as usual. We're not going to leave you guys out or anything. Podcast will appear, but what we'll be able to do is have a little sort of Q&A session, possibly, or people can actually interact in real time. So rather than reading out letters we get from people or emails or something like that, which we've done in the past once or twice, but I always forget to do it when it comes to the actual day, you can actually talk to us in the chat window and get involved. Get on the podcast.
Get involved, mate.
So a lot of people swearing at you.
That's yes. Cool. So, yes, 6 p.m. Thursday, 20th of March, we're going to do it. And it would be amazing if as many of you as possible turned up. You're not going to have to watch anything, though there probably will be a bit of a visual element. But, yes, you'll be able to hear the thing live.
Will you get dressed for this?
I might take my top off.
Oh, I'm not coming.
Well, you might. And yeah, Keith definitely would if you watched it. If I took it off. Anyway, yes, I've been playing video games. Last week I was saying that I really enjoyed Deus Ex The Fall, and this week I completed it. And James, I have to completely apologise to you. You're completely right. That thing needs physical controls. The final third of it is basically if you don't have physical controls, you are boned. So I wanted to accept that and acknowledge that you were completely right on that one.
Thanks. It's when you're jumping in and out of cover. It's when you're kind of slinking along behind walls and then you have to switch between different bits of cover. And when you're doing it, all these context-sensitive buttons keep popping up all over the bottom of the screen and cluttering up the heads-up display. And you're like, this isn't good. This isn't clean. This is rubbish. Yeah. So it worked. And I still say, like, it is one of the better first-person shooters I've played.
Yeah, definitely, because it's slower.
The way that the controls move in terms of spinning around and, you know, moving forwards and backwards, it felt a little bit better. I didn't have to take my thumb off and do about 15 turns just to look around 180, so that was good. But it's still not ideal by a long way.
No, no. So, yes, I've been playing that and enjoy it. I'm looking forward to the next one that will hopefully, cross my fingers, get made. But, yeah, controller support, please. But the game I've actually been playing is the game that everybody's sort of talking about. It's on the Nintendo 3DS, and it's called Yoshi's New Island. It hasn't performed critically very well, except for with me and the person that basically got me interested in writing about games. So basically, there are two reviews with 8 out of 10s. One of them is Pocket Gamers, and one of them is a chap called Jeremy Parishes, who writes over at US Gamer. And we both think it's pretty good. Everybody else has panned it. So that's weird. I'm not 100% sure as to why. I think I can understand some of the theory as to why people have panned it. But let me explain to you. So it's basically another Yoshi's Island game. And if you've played one of those before, you know literally exactly what to expect.
Liked Yoshi's Island. It was really good.
And then you would like this, because it is that. It is Yoshi. You are Yoshi, you are carrying baby Mario. You run along at different levels. You spit out your tongue and grab enemies and jump on enemies and do that flutter jump stuff. It's a platformer, 2D, and looks like a sort of child's memory. It's all crayon and paper, and I think it looks quite good. And it's got that sort of egg-throwing mechanic in it that Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island kind of brought to the platformer, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So it has all of that. The problem, and I think the reason it's been panned so badly, not by me, or Jeremy, is that I think it's because it is basically a retread completely of the first game. It starts off in almost the exact same way as the first game. It manages to retcon the first game, though, which is really upsetting. Basically, nothing that you did in the first game matters whatsoever in the context of the story of this one.
Did it really matter at all?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did, actually.
Its amazing, heart-rending story?
There is a really, really, really great ending to the first game. Genuinely, like, no muss. No fuss. I do think the ending to the first game is absolutely fantastic.
The bit where baby Mario and baby Luigi do a bro fist in midair, like slow motion.
You just don't get games as art, James.
Shut up.
So basically, it does what that game did in 1996 fantastically, but what it doesn't do is really add anything new. The sort of newest mechanic that they add to it are these giant eggs, and you can use them to destroy bits of scenery, very specific bits of scenery. Like, you can't really mess yourself up doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no real thought. It's just aim it in this direction. They may as well just be giant signs that say, throw this at this.
Sure.
And there are also metal eggs, which will weigh you down and take you underneath the water. But they're only used twice, maybe. But it has all of these same fun moments. It's almost like it's trying to recreate something that you've experienced already before. There's the
it's
chain
almost
chomp-
as if it's doing that because it is.
Because it is doing that. Mm-hmm. Like the chain chomp chase, for example, in the first one was actually really famous, right? Like really heart in your mouth, kind of exciting, tense race against this chain chomp that's running after you. It's like, you know, the progenitor to the auto runner, genuinely. Mm. Like it does feel like that. And it has the exact same sequence or the exact same idea for the sequence in this one, except for there's no tension whatsoever because the game's really easy. I completed the whole thing in under 5 hours.
Right.
Like, and this is like a 40 quid game. Yeah. Or 30, 40 quid game. It's got the same sequence with Poochie, the dog, you have to jump it on it and it'll guide it around, stuff like that.
Does he turn into a helicopter and stuff?
He turns into a helicopter, he turns into a drill, he turns into a minecart, you know, it feels like it's exactly the same thing. And you know, in the first game, it had that really weird Super FX chip that allowed the Super Nintendo to do bits of 3D in it.
Yes.
It even replicates a scene where there's a 3D section where this sort of spinning platform that's facing towards the camera spins round. There's only like two or three platforms in the entire game that do it, but it does that again. And it, like, where on the Super Nintendo, that was phenomenally exciting to see a game in 3D on the Super Nintendo. On the 3DS, it's like, whatever, mate. And the 3D, funnily enough, like, it doesn't even use the advancements that Nintendo's made within the hardware to any effect. So the 3D is pitiful.
I've heard that.
Yeah. It doesn't use the dual screens, and yet the previous Yoshi game absolutely did. You know, and it made it quite fun in that way. So it doesn't do any of those things. However, and this is the massive caveat underneath all of this, even though it's creatively not fantastic, it's still super entertaining. It is still Nintendo seal of approval, really good quality platformer, still some creative ideas working within the actual confines of exactly what they did nearly 20 years ago.
Well, because I've scanned the other reviews having a look at this, and yeah, people have highlighted the fact that the guys who've done it, which isn't actually a Nintendo in-house,
it's not.
Bunch of guy called Arzest or something. They've done it, and they've, from other people's perspective at least, messed it up. As in, the art style doesn't look right. Yoshi himself looks weird in comparison to the background.
Disagree. Completely disagree.
The 3D bits are like messed up to the point where he's jumping onto platforms that are actually in the background. Like he's, as in elements that he should be standing on are in fact pushed into the background, but he's still standing on them by magic.
I never once.
But there's been huge criticism of the soundtrack,
and that I completely disagree with because I think the soundtrack is excellent. Actually, I think the soundtrack is fantastic. You know, Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends uses the kazoo a lot.
Yes,
there is so much kazoo use in this, and it is really, really well done. It feels like this kind of like loungy jazz, kind of hardcore loungecore sort of a thing. Like it's so relaxed and chilled.
Yeah.
I think, basically, before the review went live, because it's Nintendo, there's a mental embargo with all of this sort of thing. I was sort of saying, this game is going to be really divisive. And I knew it would be. Like the fact that the scores range from 4 to 8, basically.
No, it's clearly, not everyone's panned it, not everyone said it's amazing. It is a proper divisive game, and they do come up every so often where it really will depend on your perspective, and I guess you got the nice end of it.
I think the best way I can say who this is for is if you're a parent and you remember playing Yoshi's Island, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, on the Super Nintendo, and you remember having a fondness for it and loving it, and you've got a kid, this is the game that your kid will play and have roughly that experience. You'll play it and think this is way too easy. I've completed it in 5 or 6 hours. It's sort of pulled on a few like nostalgia strings, but generally it's just kind of the same sort of thing that I've seen. But your kid will love it. Like it is a much easier version of that. And I kind of feel like that's where Nintendo is pushing the Yoshi franchise. I think this is what they want to make, like the kid game series. Because some of those Super Mario games now are crazy hard at times.
True. All right. Well, you can sort of judge for yourself. It's out now, £40 on the 3DS. And read all the reviews, I suppose. We wouldn't usually say that. We usually say definitely. Read our reviews. But this is a case where you should probably look at the spectrum and see what everyone
has to
say.
Read my review first.
obviously.
And then go and have a quick look at Metacritic.
And see what you think. All right, then. Well, we've covered my game. Keith, did you play a thing this week?
I played a thing.
Get you with the video gaming.
It's funny. Well, it's funny because in my head, I haven't logged it as I've been playing it, although I have been playing it. Now, neither of you might get this because you don't watch television.
This is true.
There's a quiz show on television called Pointless, which is a very good quiz show. And the whole idea is you have to find the most obscure answers to a question. So it's a bit like Family Fortunes. They survey 100 people, and your job is to find the one that the right answer that the least people said.
With
the idea of actually getting ones that no one said. It's quite a clever little thing. And it flashed up. I can't remember. It was on a website somewhere, and it flashed up that there was a mobile version of this. And I thought, I watch this every Saturday. I'm going to get this. And it's the typical kind of plugged in socially in that you challenge your friends over 2 rounds on each subject. And actually, the whole thing about Pointless is that the questions are really quite hard. They seem quite easy, but because you're looking for the most obscure things, obviously you can't say the most obvious things that come to mind. So you have to think about, you know, and take a risk and things you're not quite sure of, but will get you the lowest answer. And it has this little countdown thing where the numbers go down from 100 and you see how low you're going to get. There are two modes this game. They're the ones where you take on your friends. The only problem with it is that there is no time limit So whether you're taking your friends or you're playing on your own, you can, if so inclined, just open up another mobile device or a PC or a tablet and actually search for the answers. And because the problem is that you have three rounds and they're on kind of general subjects, geography, history, film, TV, you know, music. And it gives you the standard questions. You get given a load of suggestions and one or two of them will be wrong. All the rest will be right, but obviously you're trying to guess which is the least known.
Okay.
So the game is essentially you don't want to pick the one that you think is wrong, but you want to pick one that's quite obscure, so you might end up picking the wrong one, blah, blah, blah. But that's quite, you know, most of the time, actually, you know, you think about the odds of that. There is usually about 8 to 10 answers and two of them are wrong. Mm-hmm. Chances are you're going to get one that's right. You might not get the lowest score, which means you're out, but, you know, you've got a good chance of making it through. The final round is one where you have to, you're not given any clues at all, and you have to type in three suggestions of answers with the hope that one of them has been said by no one.
Oh, right.
And the questions are the kind of ones that they are like typical quiz show questions. It's like asking about the royals in 1600. Can you name some bizarre royals from the royal family you've never heard of? Or can you say who scored in the 1966 final? But it's things like this that if you don't know, you don't know. And so you're going to be tempted to go and have a look, because even if you go and have a look, you won't necessarily get an answer that's pointless. And the only way to win is to get one that no one has said. So it has an odd balance because there's no time limit. It's so difficult at times that you really want to go and have a check, especially when you're taking on friends and you want to get the lowest score.
How many people can you play against?
Well, at the moment, I've got 5 games going on. It essentially just, you know, it does the typical thing of sweeping your Facebook, and obviously it prompts them to let you know you've played your go, and then they have a go.
So are these games between two players, or are you all playing the same game?
Oh, no, it's one-on-one, so
okay.
Yeah, you take a guess, it tells you what your score is, then your opponent takes a guess, and if their score is lower than yours, then they win the round.
Gotcha.
If you get a wrong answer, you get a full score of 100, so but it's very tempting. And I have had a look at some of them, you know, in the interest of actually of fathoming how this game works. Because also the problem is when you're asked to put in your own answers, there are some answers that you might think have spelt a certain way that aren't. Or there was one answer where I had to name, I think, prime ministers from a certain era. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't put that he was a lord. And he didn't take the answer,
right.
Even though I'd got his name right. You know, so it's kind of little things like that can be a touch annoying when you're inputting yourself. But it's surprisingly, as all those, you know, post-draw something games are, where you get prompts every 5 minutes to let you know that someone's had a turn. It's surprisingly addictive. And as you don't watch the television, you'll never see the wonder that is pointless. But you can always play it on your phone now, so you don't need to.
Good to know. I'll play that game that I haven't seen before. Is it free to play? Is it a purchasable game? What's it cost?
Did I buy it? I think I bought it for 99p.
You spent money on
a
virtual digital entertainment product.
Yeah, I think I did.
Wowzers.
There's certainly no way of spending money in it, so I must have spent money before I got it, which is a very old school way of doing things, isn't it?
Okay, and it's just called Pointless, or is it called Pointless Companion App or some stuff like that?
Oh, well, now you're asking the tough questions.
I'm journalising here.
Hang on, let me search on this thing called the App Store. Oh, I just searched for Pointless, but it's actually called Pointless Quiz with Friends.
Okay. Oh, they're getting in on the with friends thing, are they?
Mm. It's made by Endemol, the lovely people that bought you Big Brother. So
okay. And who?
Crazy Dutch.
Charlie Brooker works for as well.
Yeah, well, who doesn't?
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
They run TV.
Okay, well, if you like the game, the quiz show, that is, I suppose you can take a look at it. And I'll probably ignore it entirely. But it's nice to hear that one of these things actually works. That's quite nice, because some of them can be a bit phoned in and rubbish, so to speak. Nice one. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank me, too. Thank you, James. Well done, you. That's it for today. Join us next week live on Twitch. OMG.
What time is that, James?
That's going to be at 6 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time if you're in the UK, or 10 a.m. in the morning if Pacific Standard Time if you're in the US.
Is it twitch.tv/abspy? Yes,
that's
it is.
That's the one.
Good.
Go there, follow us. We'll give you an alert when we go live, watch the podcast. Join in, ask us questions, flummox us. We might even throw some game stuff on there.
Pete's
as well.
Pete's going to be down the gym all week for his top
special. I'm going to buy so much body oil.
More than usual.
Mm. Amazing. All right, then, join us for that, and thank you for joining us this week. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Bye.